The lights are on red. We're away.
MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, July 10th, 2009. This is episode number 185, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today, bringing you all kinds of great stuff about MotoGP. And obviously, this show is all about the Laguna Seca wrap-up, because we were just at Laguna Seca. Fantastic time. Really, really had a good time. So we've got a lot of good stuff that we recorded about that and there on the scene and all of that sort of stuff. First of all, before we get going on, a couple shout-outs. First of all, to Lee Lipinski, who I was actually down there at MotoGP with, and we were hanging out and all of that. And then he sent me a bunch of money to pay back some of the beers I bought him and all that. And I told him, Lee, you don't have to do that and all that. But he did. So longtime friend of MotoGPOD, thank you very much, Lee. Appreciate that. You didn't have to do that, but I do appreciate it. And the other shout-out we got is Adam Silver, who works and is longtime friend of MotoGPOD, works at the Flip Camera, which is theflip.com. Now, there's a whole lot of stuff going on there, and I'm not 100% sure what I can talk about and everything, so I'm just going to leave it at that. But check out theflip.com. That's T-H-E-F-L-I-P, theflip.com. It's a little camera that you carry around, and they have a high-def version now, and this thing is awesome. It's a small video camera that is very inexpensive, and you can carry it around your pocket. Fantastic video. And unfortunately, I didn't get enough down there, but I got some, and we're going to put up a future video sort of podcast or something. We'll post it somewhere on YouTube. I don't know. Got to get together with Jules, find out what he recorded. I'll put together what I recorded. We'll make some sort of recording. But this thing is really, really cool. So check it out. We were actually camping next to Adam, which we'll talk about later in the podcast. It's a fantastic guy. Super, super nice. And he gave us a couple of these little flips to run around. And it felt a little bit like a homework assignment. It's like, oh, you know, what I did last July. But I was just down there. I was kind of concentrating on, I want to have fun. This is not my work weekend. I've disconnected from the internet. It's, you know, I didn't even record that much compared to previous years. But I just, you know, had a barrel of laughs, a great time. And in any case, some of the stuff that we did get on tape or on video, not video, but on digital, if you will, we had some great stuff on Friday, and we're going to start off with that. And we also had a call with Peter Lenz and Michael Lenz, actually. Peter was there, but he didn't really want to talk on the recorder, and I totally understood it. He's a young guy and everything. It's just like, you know, he's trying to enjoy his weekend too. So we talked to Michael Lenz, his dad. We're going to have that. And of course, we've got a call that I did with Jules shortly after we all returned and had sort of gathered and regrouped and figured out what we were talking about the race. And we're going to follow that up with a very entertaining conversation that Jules had with a couple of our neighbors. And you've got to listen to this. This is Adam Silver and Svetlana and Ted, and they were all there chatting away, and it's a little bizarre. So we're going to put that at the end of the program, even though it was on Saturday and the rest of the stuff is more or less chronological. We're going to start that off with an interview that I did with Michael Lenz on Friday, and then we'll follow it up with a little bit of post-race action right there at the scene that Jules and Lee Lipinski and I did right there in the Turn 5 Chalet, which was fantastic, and we will talk about more about that later. And then a Jules call, and then the funny stuff that Jules did, and then we're going to be done. So here we go. Long, long show. Get ready. It's entertaining. Good weekend. Had a lot of fun, and here we go. So it's Friday. We're talking to Michael Lenz. We've got Peter Lenz here. Peter Lenz has an interesting contraption going on his leg, and it's actually a little scary. And we're going to put some photos up down on the website. But here's Michael. So, Michael, what do you think so far of the weekend and all, and how's things going on?
It's really nice. The weather's pretty good. Not too hot, not too cold. Crowds are a little low, though.
Yeah, well, it's Friday. So, and also July 4th weekend. Do you think that's going to make Saturday sort of even more low-key and relaxed for those of us that are actually here?
I think quite the contrary. The expectation or at least on the fan base for the American riders, and making sure we show the support would be pretty loud. Loud.
Yes, very, very loud. But like I said, Peter's also here, and he didn't really want to get onto the podcast too much, so we're not going to bother Peter. All right, sitting here after the race, Jules is eating some chicken, and we got Lee Lipinski with us too, so it's going to be kind of cool talking about the race there. And you photographed it up there talking about the Turn 11 incident where Rossi just about put the pass on Pedrosa.
Yeah, actually, I started the corkscrew, so I got the first lap from the top of the corkscrew that I kind of made my way down. Every time I came around, I was taking more pictures, and then got to see when Rossi passed Stoner just like between 9 and 10, right? And then I lined up at turn 11 because I wanted to see the end of the race there, and I was watching the boards come up, the pit boards come out, and it was like Rossi 2.4, Rossi 2.2 at lap 6, Rossi 1.9 at lap 5. I was like, man, he could actually catch him. But then it went up to 2 again. But on that last lap, something happened. We don't know where, because I think it was somewhere between 9 and 11. Because in 11, they were
side by side.
And if Rossi had gotten a better driver, Pedrosa gotten like his little right side anxiety or something like that and flipped out, Rossi could have won.
Yeah, I forgot about the right side anxiety thing. And Lee, you're over there on the little straight that's after turn 5, which, how was the view over there?
View over there was actually quite good. And, you know, when they say this is the hidden jewel, it is in a large part true, especially getting that spot over there. Not too many people seem to be hanging around. And, yeah, you got a good view of that drive out of turn 5 and going up the straight to 6.
But,
as far as the race as a whole, if I could be brutally honest, again, a bit processional, but just being here, again, Power Sport Dynamics, got to give them the shout out because this is the deal of a lifetime at Laguna Seca. But even with it being a bit processional, it was just as exciting as, you know, just about anything else. Every time being here at Laguna Seca is very exciting.
Yeah, I agree. It's always good times. It was nice to see Hayden finish in 5th.
Fantastic. Yeah, and I love the livery on the bike.
Yes, yeah, the livery was awesome with a sort of a, almost looked like a fighter jet kind of scheme going on. Yeah.
Exactly, right.
And no, it was really, really cool stuff. We've got the AMA, what class is this again, Lee?
This is the American Daytona Sport class, if I remember.
Okay.
What the hell does that mean?
It's the Sport AMA Superbike Sporty class thing, and got red flag. Apparently, an incident in the corkscrew, 3 riders down. So you can hear the bikes going by.
They're still behind the pace car at this point, so they're at a very slow pace, and the pace car will get out of the way, and they'll do a running start.
Yeah.
Before they make really a lot of noise, what happened to Tomachi?
Oh, Tomachi! Tomachi went down here in turn 5, the first rider out, and it just looked like a low side. Actually, I never saw a really good replay of the entire incident. I don't think they had it on camera.
And Dovey was the next one out.
Yeah, Dovey went down the following that, and same sort of story. It just turn 5 was collecting riders pretty good. Well, this whole weekend.
And then Gibbonat went down. And I saw he was very upset.
Yes,
there were some. Corner workers that came up to him, he was just like, get away from me.
Yeah, I did a bit of a Kimi Räikkönen in there on the corner worker, and I'm not 100% sure which turn that was at. Did you see?
No, I didn't see it. But I just would say that Lorenzo blew me away.
Oh, incredible talent, and I mean, as much pain as a guy must have been in and everything, I mean, he's really taken it to Rossi this year in general.
I also had an uncharacteristic get off by Matt Mladen as well, you know, just a minor incident, washed out the front end, but still don't see him go down that often.
Right, and that was what that was this morning in their qualifying, right?
I believe that was qualifying.
Right.
Yeah, and Mladen said something along the lines of, you know, well, I knew I was going to be crashing sooner or later this weekend, so I'm glad I got it over with, or something like that.
Nice.
So we're having a great weekend all around here. Like Lee was saying, this turn chalet is fantastic.
Tell me something class. Did Lorenzo actually pass Rossi at one point? Because it looked like in turn 11, Rossi repassed him.
Yeah, basically, it was a pass that never stuck. Lorenzo came in so hot, and he...
Within 10?
10 or 11. I'm not 100% sure which one it was. I think it was 11, actually. And he came in just way too hot on the brakes, and I knew that Rossi would take the position back. But then also it gave Lorenzo had to go so wide and had, you know, more or less almost a semi, not quite off track, but very, very close. And it opened up a pretty good gap, about a second and a half or so, something like that.
He was catching Rossi for a while.
Yeah, and he closed that gap right back up and started threatening Rossi again. And it was, wow, this guy is freaking on the ball. I mean, I think we're seeing, although he was injured today, you know, he's sore and everything, but, you know, it's nothing like the problems he was having last year. And we're definitely seeing what Lorenzo is capable of.
Here come the bikes. So we will cover the race in better detail once we've actually seen it, because we only saw it from like three vantage points or four vantage points. But it wasn't obviously as exciting as last year, because it's going to be very hard to beat that race, but good race.
Yeah, a good weekend all around.
Yeah, a lot of bikes going by and making noise right when you put it in my face. Thanks. excellent weekend all in all. Yeah, I'm completely wiped out. We swapped being stupid drunk between the three of us.
We are getting our value for our dollar as far as beer is concerned here at the Turn 5 Chalet.
Let's give a big shout out to our neighbors. We had Adam Silver, Svetlana Garina, Ted, whose last name I don't know, but Ted was a gracious host in his RV. Then Adam and
Sergio and Armando,
who we had long chats deep into the night. Last night I think we went to bed about 2:45. I did anyway. These guys, Bob and
I was done.
Bob was done. Then Lee kind of hung around. Then he was done.
A little chat with some police officers as well. Very nice folks.
Yeah, so it's a big shout out to the Monterey County law enforcement community. They've been
they've been especially tolerant of people blowing 4th of July horns at them and saying Happy 4th of July.
Yeah, most of which I slept through.
One more thing I wanted to say is Happy Valentino Rossi Day. Monterey has declared that July 5th is Valentino Rossi Day in Monterey.
They did, so awesome. I had not heard
it's
that.
It's actually even on the MotoGP.com website. My wife, B, sent me a text saying it really did happen. So I don't know why, but great. Happy Valentino Rossi Day.
Yeah. All right, got Jules on the phone. How you doing today, Jules?
Good. Long time to see, Bob.
Yes, it's been an incredibly long time.
Yeah.
But recording this on Tuesday night, a little earlier than usual because we have some plans going on later in the week. But as I just saw Jules yesterday, so it's a little it's like, wow, just barely saw you. But I don't know about you, but that was a great weekend. I really had so much fun overall. It was a fantastic MotoGP weekend.
Yeah, it was good. It was good, and and you definitely had fun.
Uh-oh. Did I have too much fun? No, I like to think that I shared fun, that other people had fun, and whether or not it was at my expense or just, you know, laughing with me, whatever.
With you or near you? Or
Yes, exactly. Around me, at me. That hole in the stage should have been marked with caution tape.
Yes.
It's entirely understandable.
Okay, yeah. We'll just leave that. That.
Yes.
It was a great weekend, and it was a very interesting race. I finally got to watch it today because I was working on trying to get us... Yesterday I was at work, and I actually got really sick. I don't know what the deal was, but I've been kind of laid out since then. So I finally got to watch the race this morning, and yeah, it was a very interesting race. I think we saw pretty much all the interesting stuff. We'd already talked about it in the call that we made at the track, so we won't really go through the race lap by lap, right?
Right, yeah, because I was actually watching the race, like we said in the call. I was watching the race there, the feed. You know, you don't have commentary, but you don't really need commentary because it's a little different. But yeah. which commentary did you watch?
I watched the Eurosport.
Eurosport? Okay. because I wanted, I wanted to see the Fox commentary, and I thought I had my DVR, but I don't know, they must have changed the title or something, so it didn't record it. Mm. So I was a little disappointed, just because I wanted to, A, maybe do the Pepsi Challenge of commentaries again. I always like that. That's always fun. Or B, just to get an idea. So I'm not even 100% sure who the commentators were. So maybe if somebody has a recording of that that they can point me to, that'd be awesome, because it doesn't look like Speed is going to rerun it, which is... I don't know why. They did run qualifying on Speed, which I have recorded but have not yet watched. Because I saw qualifying. So, you know, there wasn't quite so much of a pressure for me to watch it. But it's always kind of interesting to watch it with the commentary. Just, who knows, sometimes they have insight, or sometimes you're just, you know, thinking, wow, I could do this better. Even though I'm sure it's very difficult. But you're right that the race was interesting, but I was actually describing it to a friend that, remember we were talking about each race being a lap within the championship,
right?
Like the, you know, if each race within the championship is like a lap in a race. And this one was interesting, I think, if you're already a fan and if you've been following the championship and things like that, more for, not so much because of the way it affected the championship standings, although that's part of it, but also because of the, just where the players were and how things shaped up. You tracking?
Yeah. Because we literally had the main three contenders finish in the order that they are in the championship. So, which meant that there's a little bit of more space there now. And, but we had a new winner, which I don't think anybody expected. Even on Eurosport, Toby Moody and Julian Ryder were like, where did he come from? You know, I mean, we know that he has good starts, but they didn't think that he could keep up the pace the whole time, which is always, you know, Danny Pedrosa.
Right.
I did want to say that the nice thing about Laguna, I think, is that even a race that is kind of processional still turned out to be very, very exciting, because we had a couple of, you know, almost very, very major events, like Lorenzo almost overtook Rossi, and Rossi almost cut Pedrosa at the very end. I don't know what the deal was, but Pedrosa... Neil Spaulding on the Eurosport channel said that it was very likely that the bike went into fuel preservation mode.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense. Yeah. Oh, because Pedrosa made the comment that he, you know, I had no idea that Rossi was so close.
Yeah.
Sort of a thing. And I mean, I was been wondering, it's like, did he have like a slight moment and we didn't see it on TV or what have you? Cause it was like all of a sudden Rossi had made up 2 seconds and he was right there. They were really close.
They were really, really close. In fact, I think Rossi could have done a little bit more in turn 11, but at the risk of taking himself and Pedrosa out. And I think he was calculating, you know, those 20 points. Pedrosa is not really my rival anymore this year. And that's why he was all congratulatory to Pedrosa on the podium. You know, he's noticed, you know, Pedrosa, I mean, Rossi will shake and congratulate you as long as you're not actually competing with him in the championship. Then he's your best friend. The moment that you're actually challenging him, he's all cold, gets all cold, and you know he'll shake your hand if he beats you. Otherwise, he'll
but he's not
your
quite
back.
So congratulatory if you beat him. Yeah, that's a good point. And yeah, you might be right there, especially after Lorenzo's attempted pass on Rossi.
Yeah,
where Lorenzo came very close to losing it. And
I didn't realize I was actually there when both those events happened, because I was in turn 11, and I saw Lorenzo's front tire leading Rossi as they were going into 11. So I was like, oh my God, he's going to take him. And then I realized that that something must have happened, because he was much slower at that point than Rossi. It was just a momentary thing. Rossi had much more corner speed left, because Lorenzo obviously had to recover from that almost fall. I mean, then I saw it on the video.
Oh, he was
like,
out.
Wow.
He was almost in the gravel.
Yeah.
He may have even touched a little bit of gravel, you know, kept it upright and stuff. But yeah, it slowed him way, way, way down. Yeah. Where were you on turn 11? Were you inside?
No, I was on the outside looking down the straight, because I was getting ready to look at the checkered flag.
Ah, okay. Whereas the angle of the camera was the outside looking more or less up, the leading into turn 11. And that was probably a better angle to see Lorenzo's antics, if you
will.
Yeah. Okay. Makes a lot of sense. But yeah, there were definitely those moments in the race that made it an interesting and exciting race for itself. And there was a lot of action a little further down. You know, Hayden's battle with Elias was quite good.
Very good. And Melandri and and De Angelis had an amazing battle. They didn't really show that, but I saw it because you know every lap. What was interesting was that standing in turn 11, you get to see all the pit boards go up, so you kind of get a preview, like, oh, here's what's gonna they're coming, and like here's what's going on, because you'll see like Stoner's board came up a couple of times and was like Lorenzo 0.1, you know.
right.
So like I knew that uh-oh. And sure enough, when they actually came around the corner, Lorenzo had already passed Stoner at that point. So,
but as we discussed, I think that, you know, after last year, you know, maybe we had high expectations. Maybe it's just such a tough act to follow, a race that was so nail-bitingly good for so long as last year was.
Yeah, and you figure this is the fifth time we've been to Laguna Seca since the GPs have returned. I would say that out of those five races, this is the second most interesting one. The other ones were actually not very interesting at all. That's not true. We had the Melandri kind of, you know, fighting through the broken foot, and we had Rossi's engine blowout, which kind of made things interesting. But in general, the winners were decided pretty early on previous years.
Right. Yeah, part of it was, like I said, as long as you're sort of following a fan of the overall championship, and part of it was just the atmosphere, no matter what. I mean, you could be, well, as we've seen, you can be at a race with hurricane force winds and rain and stuff, and you're still having a good time. Yep. So it's a little hard to sort of put it into perspective of compared to one that I just sort of watched on a Sunday afternoon, and it's like, oh, well, that was a bit of a snoozer, you know, compared to the one where you've been there all weekend and you're waiting through the Friday and Saturday practice and qualifying and all of that, and oh yay, it's race time, and then there's always that sort of not wanting it to end, you know, that once the race is over, it's like, wow, you know, now the weekend is winding down. Yep. It's over. I don't know, more fun than a man can stand.
One thing we forgot to do just to say on the bit that we recorded at the track was also a big thank you to everybody who showed up to the little meet and greet we did last minute at the stinking timing tower. Unfortunately, just as we arrived, the sewer truck came to empty the porta potties.
Yes, and that, of course, livened up the smell a little bit. And then after the sewer truck quit, it was actually a great quiet spot, mm-hmm. but it still smelled a little funky because we forgot that there's a giant porta potty cluster right next to that timing tower. And because we wanted to do some recording, and I couldn't do anything with that truck there.
Yeah.
You know, even when we ran around the corner, it was just like, you know, this is not going to work. Yeah, and then Liam, you know, Liam wanted to get out of there.
That's right.
Has a bit of a porta potty phobia.
Yeah, so you know, it was great to meet Matthew Thorne and Ina in person. They were, you know, they've been back from their trip about a month now. These are the guys who went down to South America.
Right, and their blog is still up, right? We'll have to put another link up.
SouthernExposure.com.
Put a link up for their blog. Yeah. And some fans, or you know, fans of the podcast and friends of the podcast that we saw at Indy, you know, got to say hello to those guys again. And,
yep.
And Lee was there and everything. So it was fun. And for such a last minute thing, I think it turned out pretty well. You know what I did notice on Facebook earlier on today was on the MotoGPOD, was it a group, I guess, on Facebook that we have back in June. It was mentioned of maybe we should start planning a meet and greet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and planning is not really our forte. I should send a big shout out, thank you to Ali Martinez for running that Facebook group, because that's not, you know, Jules and I don't do that. It's like, you know, I already
have
enough
overhead. That's not true. I send updates.
You're the man. You're the man. I don't.
I send updates every time you do a podcast. But yeah, but she.
Doing those? I thought Al was doing those.
No, I'm doing those. And but she's the one who actually set up the page, and she pretty much keeps it going there. So
right. Yeah, she's a big part of it. Yep. And then we've got Len Padilla doing the Twitter, which is also apparently we're getting more and more followers on Twitter. So if you want to follow MotoGPO on Twitter, go to Twitter and it's MotoGPOD. And I have to be honest, I'm not even following it at this point. I just barely signed up for a Twitter account because work is all hot and heavy about it. I don't think I'm following anyone yet, just because, well, quite frankly, I think Twitter is pointless. And
you can follow me safely because I never update anything.
There you go. Good deal. And I have to say Twitter's either going to get bought or just go away soon. And
I think it's going to get bought. Anyway, so enough about Twitter and Facebook. I will be uploading some photos there. And also to my website.
Yes, I saw the stuff you had already on Facebook, and yeah, like a small selection, because you took like 38 gigs or something crazy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is, I don't know how, when you're probably shooting pretty good size raw photo, but still, that's got to be thousands of photos.
It was about 2,000 photos that after editing at the track, so, and then I'm still editing. I have like 2 days done. Anyway, they're going to be up on the Facebook page, MotoGP page, and MotoGPOD page, and I'll have them up on my website. There'll be more on my website, because I don't like what Facebook does to photographs. They desaturate even more than I do.
Plus, they steal them too. There's all that rights thing. They, you know, the, I mean, they backed off on that, but they're still, yeah.
Yeah, it's iffy.
All your photos belong to us.
So. So I wanted to talk about Casey Stoner.
Okay.
Because this disease or whatever, this mysterious illness of his is really, I mean, it was extremely obvious at Laguna Seca. It's a very physical track. You know, Lorenzo was riding around with his collarbone pretty much sticking out of his leathers. I don't know if you saw photos of him.
I didn't see that, where photos of him after it, because he was on the podium, he had his leathers off and hanging around his waist, which is very unusual. Because of the sponsors and everything, they zip up and look quite presentable on the podium, even on hot days. Yeah. And I was half expecting him to shrug them back on because he was going up the stairs, but he looked really bad on the podium, but I didn't see. So his collarbone was like kind of out of whack?
Well, I mean, on the podium, they shoved an ice pack in there. The first person he saw immediately as he got off the bike was Dr. Costa. And he went over to him, and Dr. Costa just had an ice pack and shoved it into his over his collarbone. But I think it was at the start of the race. There's a photo on MotoGP.com where you see Lorenzo, and his shoulder just looks wacky, you know, with a collarbone sticking out right there. So, ouch.
I'll have to look for that. I'll have to look for that one, because the crash was horrific. It was, well, reminiscent of the last year Lorenzo that we got to see cartwheeling through the gravel several times, including at Laguna Seca.
Yep.
And, you know, it was such a vicious high side. Both Stoner's and Lorenzo's crashes were quite similar, with, you know, a lot of air and just slam down on the track. And, yeah, and you know, those are the kind that just, well, they break bones, obviously. And
dislocation.
Bruise you. Yeah, dislocation, actually, yeah. And just the general overall, you know, I mean, you take a beating. You know, you try hitting the road at, I don't know, 90 or 100 miles an hour from probably 6, 7, 8 feet in the air. You know, that's not going to be fun. Mm-mm. So, he was definitely worn out, which makes, again, his effort in the race all that more impressive. We really are seeing such a stupendous effort overall from Lorenzo. He's taking it to Rossi, showing his talent. Plus, he's also showing that, like a lot of these guys, you know, this is not specific to Lorenzo, but that, like so many of these guys, that they can go out there and ride through, you know, and sure, they've got some painkillers going on and everything, but don't kid yourself. That guy was hurting.
Yeah, he did an amazing race. But so anyway, Stoner, on the other hand, definitely his pace fell off, and he was very, very strong in the beginning, which got him away from Nicky Hayden. Otherwise, he may have actually gotten – it would have been amazing for Nicky to actually catch and pass Stoner at Laguna Seca on that beautiful white bike.
Yeah, that paint job was impressive.
Very nice livery, very nice livery. Anyway, so the thing is that Julian Ryder mentioned this on a – So first, actually, the first thing is that Mike Ross, a listener to MotoGPOD, who I ran into a couple times in the paddock, I think he was starting on Thursday, he came up to me and he said, you know, it was very interesting what you said about the anxiety stuff, and that Stoner has some kind of, you know, stress issues or whatever. But he actually read somewhere that someone's saying that it's actually Epstein's disease, which is like a
Epstein-Barr, isn't it?
Yeah, Epstein-Barr, exactly. Which is like, you know, chronic. It's tied to chronic.
It's like a back pain thing or something, isn't it?
Well,
or
it's much more than that. I know a little bit about it, and I read up a little bit more about it, and I didn't find it possible that that could be a tie-in, because it's not chronic fatigue syndrome. It was for a while considered to be. One of the symptoms was chronic fatigue, but that no longer is the case. However, even like Julian Ryder mentioned on the Eurosport Eurosport feed, he mentioned that the American doctors are testing him for that particular disease, and he's sticking around for a little while in California to get checked out. But I don't think that's the case. So here's the thing is, you know, we went through this kind of thing with Alex Crivier back in the end of the 90s. Alex Crivier won a championship, and then mysteriously he fell ill. They never discussed what his illness was. To this day, I can't find any information on what it was, but he retired. And I think that Stoner's going to retire. I think that if this keeps going, and I think that it's basically stress.
Wow.
I think it's stress. I think it's not. I think it has physical. I think it has real physical manifestation, but it comes from stress. And I mean, if you think about it, these guys. There's going to be guys who just can't hack the pressure, and their bodies can't do it. I'm not saying that Stoner is a pussy. Okay, I mean, he has raced with unbelievable courage and he's unshakable. I mean, we were actually getting annoyed with how unshakable he was in 2007 when he won the championship, you know. But that doesn't mean that. I mean, there's people that are predisposed to various nervous related
stress factors. Disorders. People respond to stress in a different way, and believe me, Jules, I know that I for one was not thinking that you were saying he was a pussy because he gets stressed out. Right. You might say he's a stress monster or something like that, but it's not. You know, that may or may not be the case. But I know what you're saying. I understand exactly what you're saying. People do respond, and there is gonna. You know, there's gobs of stress, particularly on Stoner, because. Okay, you are the guy that can make the Ducati work. You must continue to make the Ducati work.
I was just going
to
say that.
Et cetera.
It's not just that he can make it work. He has to now.
Yeah.
It's on his shoulders they are all trying to figure out how to get another rider to ride that thing because it's one guy.
So far, he's the one who's making it work. Nicky made a valiant effort this race, but it's still, you know, he's not quite up there. With more testing time, Nicky might be able to come through a bit better, but whatever. Stoner has clicked with that bike. Now, there's also a possibility that Yamaha has some of the stuff that they've done and everything, you know, that advantage Yamaha this year a little bit, okay? But not entirely so. You know, I think the bikes are fairly well matched.
I think by far, if you have a new rider coming in right now, they'd want to be on the Yamaha. But I was speaking to another buddy earlier today, and we were talking about this story about Lorenzo possibly going to a new Honda team, Telefonica Movistar, basically coming back to the GPs. And what will that be, the factory team, for example? Maybe there'll be a Repsol Yamaha and a Telefonica Movistar Honda next year, 2011 or whatever, and that Lorenzo is still in talks with Honda. And I was like, that's insane. I mean, why would he want to go on the Honda when the Yamaha is the top bike? And my buddy was like, and how long do you think that's going to be? And I was like thinking, that's actually probably a good point. It's like, you know,
everything is cyclical.
It's and so I mean, cyclical.
The new frame, because part of the reason for Pedrosa's, you know, might be due somewhat to the new bits that they got, including a stiffer chassis, right?
Yep.
Dovizioso was doing quite well until he crashed. And I believe he also got the parts, right?
Yep. But you know why he crashed.
No, why did he crash?
It's actually very interesting. It's earlier in the race, he was trying to get around Rossi in the front straight with over turn one, and he was leaning. You know, it is a turn, and he was leaning out at one, and he hit one of those little plastic poles that separates the outbound pit lane outgoing section of the track and the actual racetrack. He hit it with his clutch side handlebar, and something got bent on it, and he was I think he was like messing around with it, trying to get it strained or something. I don't know. You know, basically, it wasn't 100%, and that's what caused the crash, he claims.
Okay, I hadn't read that one.
Yeah, I just saw it at MotoGP.com as we were preparing to make the call. But I think, you know, Honda is going to be stronger, which is going to put yet more pressure on Ducati, and which means that Stoner is going to get more pressure. And I'm not wishing any ills on Stoner. Again, I'm saying this not for your benefit. I know you know that, but
I know
anyone out there who's like ready to start typing an email, a hate email to me, you know, from Australia or somewhere.
We can't be overly sensitive about Stoner. That was in the past, Jules.
Yeah, no, Stoner is, you know, I think I'm a huge fan of Stoner's abilities. I'm maybe not Stoner the guy, but definitely the abilities. And But I just I see this as this mysterious illness is not going to go away. He's going to have a terrible time for the rest of the season, and you know, he has a world championship. He has a wife. He can start a family. He's a young guy. Is he going to continue dealing with this crap that he's dealing with his body, or is he just going to retire? You know, if he retires, I'm not going to be surprised.
I probably should have been Googling Epstein-Barr disease and all of that, but you know, is there some treatment or cure or what have you for this? I mean, or if it's that, or just if it's stress, you know, somehow learn to manage your stress, which, you know, these things are overcomable.
They are, of course, but you know, you kind of start weighing everything out, and it's just like how much do you really want to try to win a championship? How much do you want to sacrifice long term? You know,
a lot of these guys sacrifice an incredible amount.
I know they do. They sacrifice, you know, their 20s and their 30s and their bones and their, but those, you know, a broken bone is a physical thing that you can see healing. You can feel it. You know, when you're suffering from some kind of stress or anxiety or something like that, it sneaks up on you. You never know when it's going to get you, and it's I'm,
kind of an evil,
it's
dirty
evil
thing.
Shit. So you know, basically, I'm just saying I'm not going to be surprised if we hear that he's just going to be done.
Okay. Well, actually, I hope not. I really do, because one, you know, he's carrying the flag for Ducati and Australia and all of that good stuff, and two, I don't want to see anybody go out that way. So, you know, I really do hope not. Even though, like you say, I mean, Stoner's not necessarily the most charismatic guy in the paddock. However, there are other riders that are even less charismatic. and it's funny. I was talking to Lee. Let's digress. I said that word. Take a drink. Charisma is part of their job. You know, these guys are paid a lot of money to do a job that a lot of people would like to do, right? That a lot of people only see the sort of fun side of it. Oh, you know, it's like the baseball player. You get paid a lot of money to go play a game, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's a lot more to that than just, hey, you get to go ride a motorcycle. But it still is, for a lot of people, you know, they would consider it a dream job in so many ways, right? And part of that trade-off is that, you know, you're there to sell products. You're there to sell the race series. You're there to put seats in, you know, butts in seats and turn TV channels on and all of that. And guys like Rossi do that so well. And you know, they've got the endorsements to prove it. And Lorenzo. Oh, yeah. And I don't want to particularly start a big Pedrosa slamming session or whatever. But say, for instance, before the race, in the long, a good 20 minutes, half an hour of pre-race stuff that is actually broadcast that we don't see on Speed. But, you know, you do get to watch if you're on MotoGP.com. And I think they get it for portions of Eurosport, that kind of thing. And they, you know, they're doing a lot of pit walks and they're in the garages and all that sort of stuff. And typically this is where you'll see Rossi, where he always kisses the camera lens, which always grosses me out because there's a big wet mark and all that. you know, they come in Pedrosa's garage and he's looking up at the monitors, which were displaying some timing information. Perhaps this was during qualifying or something. I don't know. He was looking in the monitors and you could see that the monitors had some information on them. There's also another monitor that's showing the feed. He knows he's on camera. Doesn't look at the camera, you know, not even a wave. It's like, you know, come on, dude, you know, give us the finger, something, acknowledge our presence. And, you know, not even the slightest. Whereas, you know, guys like Colin Edwards, this is half the reason Colin Edwards still has his seat, is because, you know, he's out there shooting t-shirts into the crowd and, you know, well, basically talking smack and all kinds of stuff that brings up the level of fun. It improves the fun factor, which in effect makes the series that much better. And this is half, well, maybe not half, but this is a portion of the reason that these guys are employed to do the job that they do. When you see, you know, with Pedrosa, and I understand also, it's like, look, he's psyching himself out. He's ready to go out there on the track and be, as Ralph Shaheen said in 2005, a warp speed, leather clad warrior. I had to throw that one in. I found that in some notes and it's like, oh my God, did he actually say that? And he did. But, you know, still, it's like, dude, just a wave. Well, you know, you don't have to, a lot of antics, just a wave.
I loved how happy Pedrosa was on the podium.
Yes, he was. And that lends an argument to the fact that he was, you know, this is the pre-race concentration psych out session. And, you know, after the race, hey, I won. Look at me. You know, happy
times.
Yeah,
I'm not going to get beaten by Alberto tonight, you know.
Yeah. The strings are a little looser today.
I'm not spending the night in the dungeon. Yeah, woo.
Nobody's going to show up on my right side and go, rah. Wow, we are so mean here. But back to Stoner. I hope that doesn't come to pass. Let's see who else mentioned. Back to Lorenzo, super writer. Talking about other writers and this and that.
Let's talk about, quickly about the guys who fell off. So,
okay,
because we lost Takahashi, which is I can't remember the last time that GPs did not have a Japanese writer, and basically he's done. It's official. He is out.
It's amazing that Honda let that sort of come and go. That you know, Scott. In a nutshell, Scott needed to sign Gabor Tomachi for monetary reasons. Plus, Takahashi's not necessarily, he's one of the 18 greatest in the world and all of that, but whatever, he's on the sort of bottom half of that. And so it was a decision that Scott had to make. But, you know, if we thought that they were going to be riding two riders, one bike each, good test bed for the single bike thing that was going to be happening next year, and we're going to get to that in a second, etc. But in a nutshell, no, Takahashi is gone. And the comments were that it's like, wow, this is surprising that Honda has sort of let this happen. Because I can understand Scott not wanting to sort of carry the weight of having to run two riders. And you know, the additional bikes weren't going to be coming through. You know, Honda's not forthcoming with a price break or whatever to help that happen. Or maybe even the bikes aren't even available at any cost. Who knows? So you're looking at running with one bike. That's going to present a whole lot of difficulties. Now you've got two riders as well, et cetera, et cetera. So Scott couldn't do it. And it's like, got to get rid of one or the other. You know, bye-bye, Takahashi.
Yep.
So, it's unfortunate. It's sad to see, but...
I have to say that Gabor is an interesting character because he's an extremely determined guy. He was there with us for quite a while at the Day of the Stars at the auction, and I just loved the way he played the auction. He did. There was a signed. He signed a shirt, and it was like, you know, the bidding was kind of like iffy on it, and so he said, "Well, I'm going to throw in some gloves, and my boots or my
whatever it was."
You just start throwing stuff in, like, you know, like, oh well, let's just pick up the Andy here, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And very charismatic. Yep. And it was an auction for Riders for Health, and I think it was initially a shine shirt, and then he threw in some boots. And you remember, because then after that, Colin Edwards came up, right?
Right.
And Colin Edwards had boots and gloves.
Yeah.
And first of all, Colin Edwards made a joke about his boots being even smaller than Tamakshi's. And Tamakshi's not a big guy.
No, he's not.
He's quite short.
He's very small, yeah.
And so Colin Edwards had predictable jokes about that. Typical Colin Edwards. But he's got two kids. Right. And so on and so forth. But if I recall, at the end of the auction there for those items, Gabor's stuff went for more than Colin's, which surprised me a little bit in front of that crowd.
Really? I wasn't paying attention, but wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Unless I missed the final closing bell and all of that, they were not. It was, I don't know, if ballpark figures here, I think Tomachi's stuff was going for like maybe $600 or $700, and Colin's stuff went for like $400 or $500, something like that. And it was like, you know, wow. So I was a little surprised about that.
Interesting.
And I might be wrong. And if you were there at the Day of Stars and you were actually paying more attention than apparently Jules or I were, you know, let us know. But that's pretty much how I recall the events. Adam Silver would know. He's a smart guy, and he kind of organized that. So. Right. But it is. So Tomachi is a very, very interesting guy, and we've noticed that his gap has been steadily decreasing, if you will.
Yeah.
Didn't have such a great time this race.
No, I had a chat with him on Friday morning, I think. It was Saturday morning. Because he had already got out on the track, and I didn't get a recording of it because it was very sudden. I just ran into him in the paddock, and I just asked him, you know, what do you think of the track? And he was like, well, you know, the first time you go through a corkscrew, yes, it is, you know, pretty pretty crazy, but he's still, for him, it's still about the bike, not the track. You know, it's like he's fighting just how incredibly different the GP bikes are from the 250s.
Yeah, getting used to it. learning curve, and I don't think anybody would expect him to not think that way.
Yeah, at this point.
All right, so covering the rest of our crashers and retirees, how about, right?
Okay. James Toseland. What the hell James happened Toseland. There?
No kidding. Clearly jumped the start.
Right.
On the replay, I noticed it. You know, I didn't see it initially because it's hard to catch that kind of stuff, but Dorna has machines to do that, or the FIM does. And but yeah, jumps the start, doesn't see the pit board for the three laps.
Oh, I see. That's right.
Right. And I haven't read anything of details about this, which actually, seeing as, you know, Yamaha sends out so many press releases and stuff, I'm actually scanning back through my email to see if I missed something. But it was, but in a nutshell, missed the opportunity to go through to do his ride through and got Black Flag. It's clearly reading a subject line on that one, wasn't it? And I believe he was actually coming in for the ride through penalty right as the black flag was thrown or something like that. Let's see, exactly. Oh well. So Toseland got black flagged. You know, bummer. What are you going to say about it beyond that? James Toseland, not much I can really say. Well, here's what you're going to say. Other than it was a tough weekend, blah, blah, blah. I feel the jump start was pretty harsh. Well, dude, you jumped the start. It's all electronic. The machines never make a mistake. He says, concentrating on catching the guy in front, and the first time I realized that I'd been penalized was when I saw the black flag. So,
you know whatever. What? Who cares? Who cares what happens to Toseland? I've decided I'm going to be glad when he's gone.
Okay.
There's a couple of British riders that are possibly going to come into the GPs. I'm getting very excited about those guys. Jonathan Ray, Leon Haslam, and Eugene Laverty. Those guys are all on board.
Eugene Laverty is Irish, but
well, okay, sorry. Yeah. From the UK, you know, from Ireland.
And, not 100% sure, actually, on that one. But, yeah, I know what you mean. And this is true. But, you know, for right now, I mean, we do have to consider Toseland because he's on one of the better teams at this point in time. And you know, one of the top 18. But you're right.
He's got his chance.
Yeah, it might be a little bit of that. And it's – I think the guy's got a lot of talent, but he also somewhat fails to achieve. How does that sound?
Yes.
I can say the same thing about Hayden, and you guys know that
Hayden won a championship.
I'm a huge Hayden fan.
In GPs. I mean, yes, Toseland has two championships in World Superbike, but the last championship, man, was he a pussy at the end.
Wow.
Don't like to see that.
Okay.
Don't like to see that. So, sorry, but...
That's all right.
Now we'll get next
guy up. Caparossi retired. Mechanical.
Well, he had a crash. He had an off, right? I haven't seen any pictures of it. I haven't seen any video of it. But he was definitely riding around with dirt on his bike.
He lost the front end and in turn six and ended up in the gravel. Did he actually go down or did he pick the bike up? I can't recall. Flipping through the press release real quick. He was able to remount. So he must have been, he must have actually gone down, damaged the bike too substantial. All he could do is ride back to the pits and retire. And I'm not 100% sure if I just missed that on the television feed. Cause typically what I was doing there in the cool turn five chalet was kind of, you know, running back and forth from standing there at the fence to watching it on the TVs where it's really sort of back away. So it's kind of back and forth, and I didn't see the exact entire race 100% on TV. But yes, in any case, bummer weekend for Caparossi. Next guy, Seth Hijibernau. Not a happy guy.
No, he was really, I think, he was having a good time and really just ruined his weekend because everything else was looking pretty good for him. I mean, not like he, you know, he was going to win a race or anything like that, but, you know, he was having fun.
He had decent position. Where was he at? He was up there, if I recall. I'm going out on a limb here. I'm just sort of throwing it out. Eighth, ninth, somewhere in that range, I believe.
What, on qualifying?
No, in the race.
Oh, when he crashed.
When he crashed, I'd have to check. Now I'm pulling out my butt here, because you know, I was watching him go by and everything, and I know he was in sort of the groups and all of that. We didn't see a whole lot of coverage on the feed, but yeah. In any case, went down and wasn't happy about it. Kind of did the get away from me thing to the corner workers as they were sort of trying to help him out.
But that meant also he wasn't hurt.
Yes, this is true too. And then our other non-finisher, for whatever reason, Dovizioso, which we already sort of briefly mentioned.
Right.
And that covers those guys. So quite a few that crashed out or black
flag. Basically, Canepa came in last. He was really last because when he was going around onto the straight, the boards were coming up for Pedrosa because Pedrosa was coming. So, I mean, he almost got lapped. And
The final gap was 118.
So, you know, with a 1 minute and 21 second lap time, which some of those guys were dropping into, he almost got lapped. But he scored four points.
For a slow last lap and all of that. Exactly, 4 points. So he came in 12th position, and you're right, dead dog last, and also 20 seconds behind De Angelis.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was last.
Yeah.
And Melandri and De Angelis finished quite close together.
Yeah, they had a great battle. The whole race. They were at it. It was very, very cool to watch that.
RDP managed to keep it on the bike. That was awesome. Or keep the bike on the track for the most part. So that was good. Some surprising results.
Let's chat about some of the... Oh, so yes, the single bike rule got dropped for 2010.
Such a relief. Yeah, that was insane. Stupid.
I mean, especially if combined that with all the rain rules and stuff. I mean, what would happen at that point?
One of these things of let's save some money by making you spend a whole lot more.
Right.
And the teams that have it are going to spend it. The teams that don't have it, don't have it. And you know, that sort of thing. So no matter what the solutions may have been, it would be silly. And maybe you save some money on one side of the balance sheet, but you're spending it somewhere else. And in a nutshell, the budget remains the same. And you've somewhat killed the racing. Because, I mean, think about it. We've seen them go through both bikes in a session more than once this year even.
Well, just this weekend we had Lorenzo crash both his bikes, you know.
Exactly. You're going to...
Vermeulen crashed in the same session, I think. He crashed twice, right?
Yeah, I think so. Was it qualifying Hayden crashed with 8 minutes, or was that a practice session?
Hayden. Hayden. Yep.
Yeah. But, you know, he's got 8 minutes left to go, and, hey, it's time to get back there, get the other bike, and go out on track. And if you only get a single bike, that's not going to happen. You know, your session's done. Because the chance of them putting that bike on a truck and getting it back to the pits in time, even if you crashed first lap out on the session, realistically, not that great. So that would be a stupid rule, and I'm glad they got rid of that one.
Yep.
So, all right, nail in the coffin for that rule.
That's it. I mean, there's nothing else to talk about unless you want to divulge our secret source of why we don't see 250s and 125s at Laguna Seca.
Yes. Actually, why don't you? Because they are an unnamed, anonymous source. I actually pitched that to somebody, and well, go ahead and tell the story real quick.
Basically, it makes a lot of sense. The problem. So we've been talking about, you know, how especially last year when Indy got the 250s and 125s, how just silly it is that they're not coming to Laguna Seca. And for the longest time, it was like another one of those cost issues. You know, that's the way it was being sold to everybody, was that it's expensive and whatnot. But one of the people that in the paddock that we talked to says that it's very simple. Basically, that at this track where there is no place for a GP bike to really stretch its legs, the 250 lap times, the fastest 250 guys would be going faster than the slowest GP guys, and they just Dorna can't have that, or FIM maybe can't have that.
It's a short track.
It's a short track, and basically that's the reason why we have no 250s and 125s. And
I thought it made a lot of sense.
Yeah,
I really
it totally
did.
Makes Plus, sense once you hear it. You know,
yeah, like, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's like, oh, why didn't I think of that? You know, and also the fact, and we did, I think we have discussed this one, that they would make AMA look sad.
Well, they wouldn't have AMA at the same. I mean, if the 250s and 125s came out, I don't think they would run AMA.
And that might be part of it as well, that the part of the whole deal was, you know, because of the limited number of weekends at Laguna Seca, we had to run the combined AMA or something. Who knows?
Well, I'm guessing that those all fell into place, but I think the original reason was they did not want a 250 rider to have a better lap time than a GP rider.
Yeah, I'd love to see it, though. I really would. I think it'd be an interesting track to watch because there is no long straight.
It's a perfect track for small bikes. It's a perfect track for small bikes.
Well, it's quite flowing, but and realistically not that super tight. I mean, it's got well, the Andretti hairpin is fairly narrow, but other than that, I mean, most of the turns are pretty flowing. So I think that it'd be a great track for that.
Yeah, exactly.
It really would.
250s are perfect for this track.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, still not happening. Doesn't look like it's going to happen next year, but who knows? We might be surprised, particularly after...
We switched to Moto 2?
After what?
We switched to Moto 2?
Yeah, possibly, once you go to Moto 2. And also, I mean, I was going to say after... I mean, AMA I have not been following this year. You and I both know we've discussed it quite a bit. I'm just a little bit sort of disappointed, disgusted with the train wreck that is the speed's coverage of it is a complete disaster. And what has happened to the series, I'm just not that thrilled about it.
Right.
But so I haven't been following it all that much, but watching, like, we mainly paid attention to the Superbike race. You know, the other races are going on and they were sort of in the background, but the one that I really watched was the Superbike race. And yeah, had Hayden make a false start. It was a disaster. Yeah. It was awful. And it showed weakness in planning and organization all around. And I'm not sure if the blame is, you know, who's messing up here? Is it DMG? Is it the AMA? Is it Laguna Seca? You know, but somebody, somewhere, there were balls being dropped all over the place.
You know what? I mean, it's the effect of people just not giving a shit as much. And it
possibly
starts,
true.
So basically the blame starts with the series being so confusing and all the changes that happened last year. I think it's going to be okay. I think it's going to be okay in a year or so. It'll kind of settle in, but...
There's a lot of talent out there. There's actually a pretty good race.
If you think about like a squad or a company or, you know, any kind of group where there's a strong leader that gives you a strong vision and a strong goal, it's so much easier to achieve that goal. You can have the same team with a shitty leader up top, and they're gonna be bumping into each other, and you know they're not gonna be sure who's supposed to be doing what. I think that's what's going on in the AMA, and this is exactly the kind of thing that you'd expect to happen when there's not clear leadership and people are just not putting 100% into it, including the track guys and including the racers,
the officials, even the racers to a point. I mean, I agree. Did you look at any of the like? Did you go to Soup or anything like that to check out some?
I haven't actually. I have not gone to Soup yet. No.
I haven't had time. I wanted to. I really did, but I just sort of actually I kind of spaced it. But hopefully tomorrow I'll get a chance to do that. But all right, enough about that. One other thing I want to throw out there real quick, and we didn't get a chance to interview Rob Wall or John Ashton and Maxine Wall when unfortunately had like a huge fever. Like she said, like 110 or something. It's like, that's, you know, brain cooking hot. So she wasn't even able to make it to the track on Sunday. But their hospitality at the Turn 5 Chalet, the Power Sport Dynamic Turn 5 Chalet, was just fantastic. That is the way to see a race, guys, because of the value for the dollar, and on top of that, the nicest people you've ever met. It was great. Pole position travel, also with Gordon Howell. Just, again, always a super nice guy. Very, very gracious. Gives you excellent value for your dollar. It's just
it was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. It was a huge amount of fun. And I mean, but you know, the fact that all these people are such nice people, and that, you know, you don't feel like you're sort of, you know, you're not having to spend just thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars or something like that to do this, you know, that it was a great value. And, I was really, really impressed. And, we'll have Rexine on the show here sometime or another in the future. I've got to do a call with her and find out what kind of future plans they might have cooking. And I think we're probably going to have Gordon on the show one way or the other soon too, to see if he's got anything special going on. Because folks, not to sort of take advantage of people like Robin Rexine or Gordon Howell and everything, but to a limited extent, their loss is your gain, because the fact that they're not selling out every seat all of the time and things. And so sometimes you can pick up some last minute deals. And if you can arrange the travel or get the time off work or whatever it is, you might find yourself going to a super exotic MotoGP race location on a comparative shoestring. And not only that, but you get to go to the race and you're in, you know, the virtual lap of luxury with free food. That food was excellent at Laguna Seca. Big shout out to the caterers. And all of that. And I mean, it made the weekend. It's like, man, this is the way to do it. I loved it. I had a great time.
Me too.
Yes.
Ditto. Ditto.
Ditto. So there's our plug for that. And of course, Adam Silver also, camped right next to him. What a great guy. Longtime listener of MotoGPOD. And, the work that he's been doing for Riders for Health, he's basically one of the, he's decided to sort of adopt Riders for Health here in the United States. And he's been working hard at getting it to be more recognized and all of that. And I think he's making a lot of progress. So, another big shout out to him. And, like we said, to our camping buddies, another Adam and, Sergio and Armando, I hope your thumb gets better. That were camped right next to us. Another set of really great guys. We had a great weekend all around. We really did.
Quite.
So, yes. Awesome. So I think that about covers it. Unless you want to run down the championship numbers real quick, the standings as far as the points, let's do that. But Rossi, 151 points. That puts him 9 points ahead of Lorenzo on 142. And then Stoner at 135. Things are shaking up a little bit because we have those guys finishing. Pedrosa's way back at 92. And then going on down, Edwards, fifth position. Dovizioso, sixth. Landry, still in seventh.
Well, Dovizioso lost two positions. He was ahead of Pedrosa.
Well, two non-point scoring races in a row.
Well, Pedrosa didn't finish last race either. So this is 25 points really just killed him.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. Melandri, still, point numbers are going down per race, although, you know, he managed to pick up 6 points here, but everybody got lots of points at this race. But the fact that he's still in seventh, that says volumes. Vermeulen.
So speaking of Melandri, Kawasaki has, you know, made it clear that they are not coming back no matter what. So he's basically stuck on his bike, I think, in this form for the rest of the season. And he is almost a shoe-in for Grissini Honda next year.
Okay, where'd you read that one?
A couple places. I actually heard about it at the racetrack. I think it may have been Liam that told me about it.
So in any case, we don't need to go down all the rest of the numbers. Hayden's in 12th spot in the championship, just to throw that one out, because I am the Nicky Hayden fan, right behind James Hoseland. Other than that, things are shaping up, and it's going to be an interesting rest of the season. Still got quite a few races going on coming up to Germany at Der Sachsenring.
There you go.
July 19th. I can't resist. So we will see how that one turns out. All right, Jules, I will let you go and go off and be sick somewhere. And it was great talking to you. It was great spending the weekend with you. I really enjoyed it a lot, Jules. Thank you very much.
That was awesome. Take care.
Ciao.
Ciao.
I'm stating for the record, I don't feel no love today.
That is Svetlana. This is day 3 at Laguna Seca for us, because we were at the Day of the Stars, so day 1. Then day 2 was Friday. Day 3 is Saturday morning.
What's today?
Good morning.
Day 3, how you doing?
Good.
What do I have to say?
Whatever. I mean, what do you think of Laguna Seca so far?
Sucks. It absolutely blows. It's a good word, blows, right? I'm not like cursing or anything.
No.
Yeah, all these people who organized everything, whole Laguna thing, they suck. Riders, guests, fine. But the locals who work here suck.
Example.
Well, you know, they tell you what to do. I mean, why should they tell anyone what to do? They check your passes. They reroute you. They go this way. Don't go that way. Don't step on the grass because, you know, it's a fresh grass. Don't step on the, AstroTurf because it's a different color of AstroTurf. Have you seen so many different colors of AstroTurf? They have peach. They have black. They have blue. They have green. It's supposed to be. And they even had white. Well, the rest of it, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so...
I follow Lorenzo. Lorenzo is, like, hot. He's, like, the best rider. He's going to win. And he, you know, he will have a lot of grip, more than Grassi.
Rossi. Rossi's the grip guy.
Yeah, Rossi's a good guy, but Lorenzo...
The grip, what?
No. Rossi is much... Lorenzo is much better. He's a better rider. He's way cuter than Rossi. He's not as charming, but he's definitely younger. You know what they say about young guys?
What?
They suck. But they grow bigger. And they become better riders soon. So that's going to be Lorenzo. Don't laugh at me.
Well, he did do... more than a race worth of laps, didn't he?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
the whole time was very, very fast paced.
Yeah, he ended up in second because he's a very kind person. He's very charitable. So when, you know, Stoney was like hauling ass, he like really, really, really wanted to finish first. And he's like, okay, you go finish first, but this is just practice. Remember, it's practice number one.
Yeah, exactly.
There will be practice number two, and there will be races. And guess what? Lorenzo is winning. Huh?
You missed out qualifying.
Oh, he wins that too. We know that, right? Yeah.
Oh, you didn't even have to mention it then. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like it's a given. Lorenzo wins. Rossi, he may finish second.
You think Rossi went out on a really soft tire to get... I didn't see if he had the white rim, but I think he may have went out because it was only like two or three laps he did, right?
Rossi was having fun. He was cruising around, waving hands, you know, getting his mojo back and stuff. So that's it.
Yeah.
Right? And I saw Stoner getting on the almost getting into the dirt and corkscrew, I think because his head is still, you know, messed up from the last year. You know, and he's trying to get over the thing, but Rossi's ghost is everywhere. He's haunting him. So, nah.
I like that. He's haunting him. That's good.
Totally.
That's good. He's been haunting him since Catalunya, maybe. I don't know.
Exactly.
He's been building up to this race, maybe.
What I also noticed, you know, all those bikes are noise. I mean, you put earplugs, you stand there, right? And you try to hear your own thoughts. But Ducati still are the loudest. When Ducati goes, you don't even know if you have earplugs.
Yeah.
The other bikes are like nice. I think it's the pitch, you know, it's like...
Yes, exactly, exactly. They actually also almost swapped pitches. When in the 990s, the Ducati had a low rumble. Now the Yamahas are the...
Yeah, and I like the low rumble. It's like, it's very much, you're like, here I come, you know. And Ducati, me too, you know, fun.
Well, they're like revving to 21,000 in testing, so I don't know what they're revving on the racetrack these days, but...
Well, you know what I'm really glad about? That all this ugly noise for 3-4 days in a row is going to bother local residents because they give us all this hard time about stack pipes and stuff. You know, now they know the difference. Now they know what the loud bikes sound like, right?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. Okay, Svetlana, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Where are you going to be watching from today?
From everywhere.
From everywhere. You guys walk around, do a walk around?
Omnipresent.
Cool.
Omnipresent.
Omnipresent.
Them, right?
Nice. Me too. All right.
Have fun.
See you. Teddy? Predictions?
Yes.
Teddy's having a breakfast of champions over here. He's having a Corona.
You know, I have sexy time with the fat deer over there. I'm hope that one time I can come back on a later date and have maybe sexy time once more with this fat cow over here.
Where are you from, Teddy?
Kazakhstan.
Ah, yeah.
High five. This deer looks like my sister. I miss my sister.
You miss her a lot?
According to the deer, yes. Like.
Thank you, Teddy. And finally, we got Adam Silver here.
I can't follow that, Jules. I'm sorry.
You're right, you can't, but you're going to. So
between Svetlana and Ted, it's just...
Question.
So I talked to Gabor yesterday, and
yes.
He said that it's not Laguna that's you know flipping him out. It's just it's still the bike. Like the move from
I can't imagine what his life must be like. He very graciously came and spent some time with us at Day of Stars in the auction, and I had a chance to chat with him a little bit. And he's a super nice guy. And I mean, what was it? When was he 125 champion? Like
2007.
So he's gone ago. From the end of 2007, 2008, he was in 250s, right?
No, he was still in 125s.
In 2008?
Yeah, he only just got into 250s.
So I can't imagine what it must be like for him to go in within
like
the space
half
of...
a season of 250s, not even.
Yeah, and then like, and then now he's on an 800.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that must be like. It's just got to be
he's
insane.
He's basically saying that the bike is just massively overwhelming. Like
I can imagine, yeah. The bag. What are you guys laughing at? Teddy, your belly button
popped again. I'm flashing you guys when you're sitting in the yakki.
So, anyway, what are your predictions for the race?
I think it's going to be down. It's going to be a battle between Lorenzo and Rossi.
Huh? No,
I don't. Yeah, I do too. I think Stoner is going to be in there, and I think he's going to have his issue again. This track, 32 laps. He basically has a massive fall off once he's physically starts to get exhausted.
Well, the other thing is, you know, they were saying that he's not well.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He's definitely not 100%. Definitely not.
The press release said that once he hits the mark when riders normally get tired, he just falls off the cliff in terms of endurance. So this track is incredibly, you know, you have
physical.
To have, I mean, it's so physical. So I don't think he's going to be up there. I think actually Dovey's going to be on the podium. That's what I'm going to call.
Who?
Dovey.
Oh, you reckon?
He had some good, good practice, and he was really good here last year on the first time out. You know?
Can you guys keep it down? We're doing an important interview over here.
Final words?
Lorenzo wins!
Lorenzo wins, I heard.
Okay, Svetlana says Lorenzo wins. Final words, I'm looking forward to a fun couple of days.
Yeah.
Those are and I'm very happy that we had a successful Day of Stars on Thursday. That was really good.
It was really good.
Yeah, so it's great. And we got some cool riders, and all of you folks that heard about Day of Stars that were thinking about coming this year, you should definitely come next year because it's a fun event.
I was part of it and I freaking loved it. It was great.
It was a great time.
Yeah.
But if anyone needs a t-shirt for $350, you know, why don't you guys call me, because I have those t-shirts.
There we go.
So Dan is wearing it.
You heard it first on MotoGPOD.
All right, there we go. That was our show for Post Laguna. We're going to have some more stuff coming up. I recorded some audio and all of that. We're still going to be changing up some of the audio that we do in here in the show. Haven't had time to get a chance to do that yet, but that will happen very, very shortly. And, of course, we will be back next week talking about what's going on in motorcycle road racing all over the world. World Superbikes, MotoGP, maybe even some AMA. After that race, the AMA Superbike race, it was a pretty good race. There was, like we said in the call, a few missteps and all that sort of thing. But other than that, the actual racing was very, very good. So we'll see if we can incorporate that into the show. And other than that, keep the shiny side up, the rubber side down, and we'll talk again next week. If you listen to this far, you know that it's time for the disclaimer. And sometimes you might get tired of hearing these disclaimers. I sort of occasionally get sick of recording them or making up new, slightly entertaining versions, because I've kind of already gone through all the obvious ones. And now I'm just sort of trying to rummage around and find something, somehow, some way to say in a different way that MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All the other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.